CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang in Tokyo, Japan. And we're joined by our colleague Fraser Howie in the Highlands of Scotland. Long experience in the ways of the markets of Asia. We ask Fraser now to help us understand how the protests these last days against COVID-19 lockdowns, the absolutism of the party, and in particular, Xi Jinping's extending himself indefinitely for life as the absolute general secretary of the party, how that is affecting those who believe in investing in China, those who regret it, and the future. Fraser, a good day to you. Do you see anything large moving away from or towards China with these moments of unknowns? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Hello, Gordon. Look, I think China is in a even a more precarious position than it was a week ago, which is saying something because, as we have spoken before, the economy, just the difficulties in the economy, which is also independent of the zero COVID policy. They obviously feed off one another, but China already had major economic problems before COVID. They were really difficult problems to solve. The political structure that is, remember, there's no division of powers within China. There is no checks and balances on Xi Jinping. His dictatorship for life causes problems in itself. And this past week, while these protests are, there are many of them, they are across the length and breadth of the country, but they are still very limited at the moment. But the fact that Chinese are prepared to come out and show, even in a handful of people, down with Xi Jinping, down with the Communist Party, we want freedom. That's quite significant. And they seem to be echoing in some ways a faint echo of what we saw in Hong Kong. And I think the party should be worried. I think we'll be able to get on top of the protests, but they should be worried because something's awakened in the Chinese population, which they don't want to awaken.
Gordon, you have a question for Fraser.
Fraser, with the first news of the protests, we saw financial markets around the world drop. They've recovered since then. But in general, what do you think people in Wall Street and other places are thinking about the stability in China? And how will it affect the way they approach investing in Chinese equities?
Sure. Well, I think, as we've spoken about before, Gordon, this they fall into two camps. There are still the true believers who still think that it's the CCP is the way to go, that the pragmatic China leadership, the long-term thinking, etc. And you saw that some, frankly, foolish remarks from the UBS chairman at a recent conference in Hong Kong, just the rah-rah China, go story. And of course, there's always going to be those diehards. But I think there's growing evidence that the genuinely smart money is having to reconsider China. And I think these protests as well show that even though markets may look forward to a reopening of China or a re-engagement with the world, they're realizing that the protests mean that it's going to be a very messy re-engagement or opening of China, much slower than they probably thought. And that protests in China against lockdowns or whatever are of a very different flavor from what we saw in Europe or even in the States, where you had high case numbers, people were becoming accustomed to COVID, and they had still had to suffer lockdowns. In China, COVID is still to hit the country. The number of cases at the moment is minuscule compared to the size of the population. So lots of COVID pressures to come.
And Fraser, the puzzle about the senior leadership of the Chinese Communist Party, these protests make it even more difficult to interpret what happened when Hu Jintao was escorted, dragged, pulled away from the People's the Party Congress that voted unanimously for Xi Jinping. Are we going to just guess? Is this the non-transparency of the presidium, you know, those old men on the platform in Moscow for the May Day parade? Is that where we are, guessing to what's going on in the party?
I think if we're honest with ourselves, I think that's where we are. We are having to guess here. The reality is we don't see the inner workings. We don't even see, you know, we see very little. It's speculation, conjecture about much of what goes on. As much as we study the rules and the guidelines and we can have some feeling of what's going on, a lot of this is very hidden. Nothing's explained. It's also, I think, contradictory, if we're honest with ourselves. There isn't a grand overarching plan in many cases. It's haphazard. They're bumbling through difficult problems. And we are having to guess. And you read not only of the Hu Jintao example at the Party Congress, Obviously, Jiang Zemin's just died as well. That's a much more formal thing that the party would like to control. But maybe that too will be a spark to further protests. And looking back to the Jiang Zemin years, which were almost seen as a golden age, when we now look from where we are with Xi Jinping.
Gordon, a question for Fraser.
Fraser, it's fascinating you raise the issue of the death of Jiang Zemin, who was the predecessor to Hu Jintao, who we just discussed as being frog marched out of the 20th National Congress. In the past, in 1989, there were mourning for Hu Yaobang, a Communist Party figure. And those were actually the trigger for the big demonstrations in Beijing and 370 other Chinese cities. So there does seem to be a call for mourning for Jiang Zemin among younger people in college and elsewhere. And it would seem to me that we're seeing perhaps a replay of that, that using the mourning for a communist leader as a means of protesting current communist leaders. You know, your take on this dynamic in the protest scene in China.
Yeah, I think, look, I think it's certainly, there are certainly echoes of that, or there can be. That sort of springs to mind for lots of us when you think about it. It also, of course, is it's fighting the Communist Party with its own words and its own language. It's the same with the protests. A few weeks back, they're singing, you know, the national anthem or the Internationale and whatever. You know, they're throwing back basically these communist slogans to serve the people at the party who claims to be serving the people. It'll be interesting to see. It's going to be a delicate balance that they obviously will want to commemorate Jiang enough that people don't sort of take on their own initiative. But it makes you wonder as well, will she want to give Jiang too much prominence? Because that will make people look at the very different environments that we now find ourselves in. And of course, Gordon, you were there. You were working in China, I think, as was I at that time when Jiang Zemin was in power. And it's, you know, things were far from perfect. So when I say golden age, it's very much sort of tongue in cheek. But there was a different direction of travel very much. There was certainly an opening that was going on. There was definitely engagement, and now we are in a position of closing and disengagement, which is driven largely by the Chinese themselves.
The Financial Times reported in these last days that Jack Ma has been living in Tokyo for nearly 6 months. With side trips to the countryside, regular visits to the U.S. and Israel, says the Financial Times. He's said to be a very good friend of Masayoshi Son of the SoftBank. So the founder of Alibaba, friends with the founder of SoftBank, living in Tokyo. These are large investor class decisions, Fraser. What does this tell you about capitalism on the mainland?
Well, what it tells you is that the most successful private entrepreneur in China prefers to spend his time in Japan. And that must tell you a lot about his concerns and fears. I am frankly surprised he's allowed to spend so much time out of the mainland, but perhaps he's been told to keep quiet. He'll get his freedoms if he keeps quiet. He'll get to keep his assets if he gets to keep quiet. But Jack Ma is a case study in many ways of how power works in China, how business works in China. And once again, the great tragedy for China is that the system basically takes the best of the Chinese and chews them up and spits them out. And it benefits the rest of the world that we get the benefit of the best thinkers, the freedom loving Chinese to come overseas, and it reflects very poorly on China, actually, that Jack now spends his time in Japan, and it tells you that should be a warning to all investors.
Fraser Howie is co-author of Red Capitalism, The Fragile Financial Foundation of China's Extraordinary Rise. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.